Welcome to the final Drilling Deep of 2022. I'm your host, John Kingston. In the beginning of this year on this show, and like with every edition, I would explain that the show is called Drilling Deep because we kick things off by talking about oil, and you have to drill for oil to get it, and you need oil to make diesel. I still say that here now at the end of the year. The difference is that now I say it into a camera. It's been a smooth transition from audio only to video to join the lineup of all the shows on FreightWaves TV. And I want to thank South Turk in our production department, along with his colleagues, for making that all happen. I could go on and on about diesel in 22, but I'll try to keep it simple. You know how you think diesel was just exhausting this year, as well as being expensive? Let me throw out a few numbers to show you how exhausting it was. Years ago, in the olden days, the price of heating oil on the then NYMEX commodity exchange might move less than a cent on most days, up or down. The heating oil contract eventually morphed into a diesel contract because the environmental specifications on the two distillate products got so close that effectively there really weren't many differences at all. So now it's generally considered a diesel contract, though some people still refer to it as a heating oil contract. Since Russia invaded Ukraine, there have been only 8 days that since late February of this year, only 8 days in which the price of ultra-low sulfur diesel on the CME commodity exchange has moved up or down by less than a cent. That's 8 days in more than 200 trading days. Does that sound like a small number? Let's compare it to the beginning of 2019, when there was no pandemic and there was no war to impact diesel markets. There were 8 trading days of movements less than 1 cent between the start of the year and the end of February, just 2 months. And now it's taken from late February to today to get to 8 relatively quiet days. So yeah, it's been crazy. I'll give you another number. Here at FreightWaves, we track a spread under the data code of fuels. It's real basic. We take the retail price that we have, either nationally or in a specific market, and we subtract the wholesale price of diesel for that corresponding market. We have data for both of those, and historically, on a national basis, that spread tends to move toward equilibrium at about $1 to $1.10. But it can be lower than that, or it can be higher than that. It can be a lot higher. And that's what has happened recently. The sharp decline of diesel in futures and then wholesale markets went at way too fast a pace for retail diesel prices to keep up. Okay, I know what you're thinking. The people who own the stations don't want the prices to come down. No, they don't. But at a certain point, as wholesale prices do come down, somebody is going to use that opportunity to try to grab market share on the street. You have to understand that fuels competition on the street is cutthroat. And then their competitor then, after that one guy cuts his price, their competitor has to match that. And then the next guy down the street, he has to do that as well. And that's how we get a competitive market. But when prices are coming down this fast, the retailers are just not set up to keep up that fast. So that fuel spread that I said tended to be normalized at $1 to $1.20 or $1.10, it got out recently as high as $2.20. It's been coming down recently, but the whole point here is that if you think as a diesel consumer, you've never lived through such crazy times, you're right. Another example. As I said here before, the price of diesel will always be tied primarily to the price of crude. But the price also will be impacted by the spread between diesel and crude in the spot and futures markets. In 2019, the last full year, as I said before, not impacted by war, not impacted by the pandemic, the spread on the futures market between diesel and Brent averaged about 41 cents over the course of the year. It opened this year at a little under 50 cents per gallon. But the average this year, up through data of Wednesday of this week, was a little less than $1.20 per gallon. That 80 cent difference is something that eventually you pay at the pump. Why was that? Over the course of this year, I've talked about why, so I'll run through it again quickly. Refineries that were closed during the pandemic that then were not replaced by new ones because the pandemic slowed or halted construction of new ones. And a big reason in my mind is that new rules on the quality of marine fuels that kicked in during 2020, actually at the start of 2020, finally made their presence felt in the diesel market this year. Their hit was delayed because of the pandemic, but it's here now. It all adds up to a wild ride for the diesel market in 2022. I hope you found the ride a little easier to at least understand because of what you've heard here on Drilling Deep. Well, it's time to wrap things up for Drilling Deep this year with a look forward and a look back. We've got a somewhat changing of the guard in Washington ahead of us in 2023 with a Republican House, though the Democrats continue to hold the White House, obviously, as well as the Senate. We've also got what we expect will be the first full year of the current head of the FMCSA, Robin Hutchison. And who better to talk about all that and help us close out 2022 than Dave Heller, Senior Vice President of Safety and Government Affairs at the Truckload Carriers Association. Dave, welcome back to Drilling Deep.
John, thanks for having me on. I know we always get into great discussions whenever I come on your show, and I'm betting this time's no different.
I'm sure it will be. So let's have you focus in right to start. If you had to look over government actions that impacted trucking this past year, what do you think would be the most significant?
Wow. You know, it's been a long year. You know, there's vaccinations, right? And the effects that vaccination had on the economy. There's obviously the supply chain crisis that also took place. Incorporating new people or trying to attract new people to the industry. We've kind of run the whole gamut, to say nothing of the fact of regulations that are starting to come out of the starting to come out of the government. So we've done this has been a jam-packed year, to say the least. And it seems like month to month, we were going from a different important topic to a newly different important topic. And we haven't even mentioned misclassification yet. So it's just like there's a whole gamut of things that 2022 had brought about that we're looking forward to putting it in the rearview mirror and bringing in 2023 and seeing what that brings.
Hey, you know, in preparation for this, I went in the archives of my colleague, John Gallagher, who covers Washington for FreightWaves. And really, when you look at all his stories sort of one after the other, what astounded me was just how much stuff has happened just recently, just in the past 2 or 3 months. And of course, John writes, you know, every day about something going on, but just it's not as if things quieted down. Let's take one that was just introduced, the Trucker Bathroom Access Act. Now, what is the point of introducing a bill like that so late in Congress? If not just late in the session, but late in this Congress, because this Congress, of course, will be replaced by another Congress. And my understanding is that all legislation that has not been approved dies and then has to be reintroduced. I mean, this is an act that seems obvious on its face. But then I thought about it and I can imagine, you know, the warehouse sector, they just don't like to be regulated. Like any agency, they will always tend to fight regulations of what they have to do. But this seems like so obvious. Who could oppose more bathroom access for truckers? So talk to me about this bill.
Well, first and foremost, it's unfortunate that we actually have to have a bill to address this, right? That we have to have a bill, a proposed language that would allow truck drivers to use restrooms. I mean, as basic human decency is to let people who need to use the bathroom, to say nothing of the fact that somebody who is esteemed as a professional truck driver because everything people own is brought to you on a truck. So in saying that, that's kind of the issue there is the fact that it's not always open for business when it comes to restrooms and the availability for our professional truck drivers on the roadway, which developed the need for this bill. But at the same point, you always have to say, really, do we really need this? Now, you know, you question the timing and why is it brought up now? Well, certainly there's a legislative trick or lame duck session that is currently going on, and they're doing some year-end spending packages. Nothing in Congress seems to get done by themselves these days, even as something as simple as a bathroom bill or even a truck parking bill. They have to get included into things, much larger pieces of omni-type legislation. Think appropriations or end-of-year spending packages in hopes that they can get the language incorporated into that, even though it may be different than the original intent of the massive omni-type piece of legislation. They can usually try and get some language in there.
So the hope here is that we still have to deal with the omnibus spending bill, which would fund the government for a significant amount of time. The hope here, you believe, is from the sponsors is that they want to get this bathroom access bill into the omnibus?
Basically, yes. And then the reality is if it doesn't get in there, in order for it to be considered in the next Congress, it would have to get reintroduced. We're dealing with that on truck parking, for instance. You know, the truck parking bill that got introduced, it's not going to get in that year-end package, so it's going to have to get introduced again next year. That's at least what the tea leaves are showing. And the same can be said. You know, I imagine you know, with lame duck going on right now, is probably not going to be a lot of extra riders that go in there, and they're trying to conclude as quickly as possible, keep the government open. So you don't sound too optimistic
about the fate of either one of them getting in any kind of big, broader package here at the end of the year.
You know, the good news is the conversations are still happening, where there was a time where you didn't even have these conversations. Truck parking was never acknowledged. Bathroom bill was never something that people realized existed. And now here we are outside or post-COVID world, where I think people are starting to recognize the essentiality of the professional truck driver. And in saying that, that's where we are. We're putting the needs of the professional truck driver first and making their days easier, if you will.
Yeah, you just got to wonder, if you can't get this bill passed, I mean, if you look at that first 2020 rush, and truckers were still on the road doing their job, and they were as revered really as almost any profession in America at that point. If less than 3 years later, you still can't get like a bathroom access bill through or a parking bill, you just wonder, you know, was this just a flash in the pan that had no lasting legacy in terms of the societal view of truck drivers?
You know, I hope not. And again, I think here at TCA, we're seeing more headwinds that look favorably upon the industry and the drivers themselves. I know when I go down on Capitol Hill, I know that the title of professional truck driver is a revered one these days. And it, as you said yourself, it's a bipartisan favoritism at this point. You're not going to find a lot of people that oppose what the professional truck driver needs on a daily basis. The reality is supporting it and actually getting something done are entirely different. And that's kind of what we're looking at nowadays. But I think the essentiality of that driver is still there. I think they're being looked upon as high or higher than they ever have been coming out of COVID. COVID showed, I think, the world that. There was a big sign in my neighborhood that said, thank you, truck drivers. And I saluted that almost all the time I drove by it. And that hasn't gone away. I think people are starting to acknowledge the reality that is drivers these days and will continue to do so.
All right, so let's talk about the first semi-full year of Robin Hutchison, who's the FMCSA director. After a long series of interims or short-term FMCA directors, I haven't been working for Freightways that long. It'll be 5 years in February, and we're probably dealing with five or six in 5 years. I mean, this is a Senate-approved job, which usually has quite a bit of cachet to it, and you can't keep anybody into that job. So what are your views of Robin Hutchison so far? And do you think she's going to stick around for a while?
Well, fingers are crossed, right, as to whether she sticks around. And we like working with her. We have the utmost respect for her in the office and those that do work at FMCSA. They're great industry partners and are always willing to have the conversation. And with any conversation, you may not like the end outcome. I think that has to be acknowledged, because that's just the part of the game, right? Is sometimes they don't always bring good news, and sometimes they don't always bring bad news. But at the same point, they're always open to conversation. And I think that echoes true with Robin and her staff over there at FMCSA. In saying that, she's certainly coming in and has some issues to deal with, right? She's got some post-COVID access and emergency exemptions that she continued to issue, as well as what else is going on in the industry. She's dealing with a speed limiter rulemaking that obviously is one that, you know, there are parts of the industry that just don't like it or aren't apt to even consider it, or dealing with now the National Roadway Safety Strategy, all on top of the fact that she's got to find more professional truck drivers to fill those seats in empty trucks. So she's not coming in at a quiet time, to say the least.
Right. Okay. And you know, you talked about, I was going to talk about independent contractor status, but that doesn't really deal with her. So let's go with a couple of issues that are, you know, really more regulatory, maybe from FMCSA or other parts. So I'm going to read you some leads from my colleague John Gallagher's story, and we'll go right to them. The Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration is proposing to pull back the relief automatically given to commercial truckers and trucking companies when disaster strikes. The change, which would alter a rule established in 1992, would mean that during a regional emergency caused by weather or other supply chain disruptions, drivers and carriers would be exempt only from daily and weekly limits on driving time and not other requirements that are also exempt in current emergency waivers. I mean, they do give out these waivers pretty quickly. That they will be given out sometimes. I'll look back on the list of waivers, and it'll be for something maybe from 2-3 months earlier that I have to kind of really reach into my memory to remember that, you know, this happened. Is this something, though? But I mean, the fact is it's still a waiver, and organizations like yours would tend to favor a more liberal waiver policy. How do you feel about that?
you know, it's interesting. If a tree falls in the woods and nobody's there to hear it, does it make a sound? You know, that becomes that issue. And one of the things that I know we've had discussions with our membership about is some of these waivers that do get put out there. And is industry actually taking advantage of them? Well, you know, in a lot of cases, the answer is no, they're not. As much as we'd like to believe or like to deliver the goods to the people that need them, there are other aspects that come into the real world, right? And if there is indeed an accident, then the goods are not going to get there anyway. And if there's an accident because a driver may be fatigued or tired, it doesn't make sense for them to continue driving. So while the waivers existed or things like that in terms of a national emergency, we had a lot of drivers and carriers who didn't take advantage of them. I look back at the COVID waivers when all those hours of service exemptions were issued or waivers that were issued. Many carriers did not take it up on that. Most of the members did not abide by those. They just followed the regular hours of service regulations because of the nature or safety of those rules and what they brought about and what could possibly happen if there was an accident. Litigation inevitably would ensue or what have you. And why would you want to be exposed to that regardless of the existence of a waiver or not? So certainly there is a need for these waivers. There's no doubt about it. But whether the entire industry follows them is another question altogether.
Yeah, you know, I think about a year ago, it was at the end of 2021 when the rates were so strong, you were hearing a lot of people in the industry saying, you know, a lot of drivers have made their money for the year. You know, September, October, they just called it quits. They said, look, I made X amount of dollars. That's more than I even anticipated making. I'm going to take November, December off. And given that, you wonder when you get this opportunity to drive like a maniac. You know what I mean, maniac. I mean, in terms of hours, not that they're going to drive like a maniac, but drive like a maniac in terms of racking up the hours because of the exemption. You really wonder how many grab that opportunity. And as you're saying, you don't know that it's all that many.
Correct. And I think that becomes the reality. You know, first and foremost, you have an industry here that strives to be safe first and foremost, because they know trucking is delivering freight from point A to point B and doing so safely. And if one part of that equation is interrupted, then none of it works. So that's the part that they're going by. They want to do so safely. They recognize there's a need for it, an emergent need for it, and are trying to get the load there as quickly as possible. But again, if you're not doing so safely, the load's not going to get there.
All right, I'm going to read you again another John Gallagher lead, okay? The Biden administration will soon issue new tailpipe emission standards for trucks that most truckers, from single owner operators to owners of large fleets, one could place heavy cost burdens onto the U.S. economy as a recession already looms. As proposed by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in March, the new nitrous oxide emission standards for heavy-duty truck engines will be either a two- or one-step process. How big a deal is this?
Well, I think it speaks to equipment problems overall, if you will, and not just with this rule, but what the whole future looks like. I mean, when you're dealing with the eventual move to zero emission vehicles, we as an industry are certainly looking at it saying, how can we get there, specifically in the long haul trucking segment, right? I mean, there's not a piece of equipment that exists right now that can actually satisfy the daily demands of driving in a long haul market or driving across country in that realm. But yet here we are, we're looking at a rule that by 2040, we're supposed to be at zero emission vehicles. And we don't even have a charging infrastructure in place, to say the very least. The ATRI report, I believe, revealed they needed a 40% increase in electricity output across the country when getting even 1% is a stretch at this point. So this just tells you the long uphill battle it is this is cart before the horse type of stuff. And this is not trucking being abstinent or obstinate and saying, we're not doing this. This is real life scenarios, because we have to obviously have equipment to haul the freight. You talked about waivers and emergency waivers. And if the trucks don't actually work, we can't even get to the freight to market, much less there in an emergency type of situation. So we have to make sure the equipment does indeed work. And there have been times where it hasn't in the past. And at that same point, we have to look at it and be realistic when we're looking at it. You know, there's a lot of things that come into play than just magically saying these trucks have to be more environmentally friendly. I think everybody would say, yeah, we would love to be environmentally friendly, but we do want to do so in a process that works, that we can guarantee our freight can get hauled and whatnot. A lot of these carriers have tremendous aggressive equipment trade-in practices, if you will, constantly adopting new equipment, getting the newest of the new pieces of technology on the roadways. And this is no different. They're just looking to make sure that that technology actually works because they're investing those dollars into it.
All right. Now let's talk about something you mentioned early on. I think it'll probably take up the rest of the time we've got, and that's independent contractor status. you've got two things here. You've got AB 5 is now the law of the land in California trucking as of the middle of the year. And you have the Biden administration rule at the Department of Labor to be enforced by the wage and hour division of Department of Labor that by all interpretations would make it tougher to identify, tougher to define a worker as a true independent contractor. Let's go right to the second one. This rule, I'm sure, will be approved. If there are any changes in it, they probably won't be major. I think the rule did not come down quite as severely as a lot of people thought it was. I sat in on a kind of a just a listening session where people could do their comments, and half the comments were, don't do the ABC test in this rule, which they did not. Looks like they kind of wanted to, but they felt that legally they could not. How big a deal is that rule for the trucking business?
Well, any threat to the independent contractor business model is a big deal. Look, the truckload environment in and of itself is an environment that was founded on the independent contractor business model. There's no doubt about it. Look at your large truckload carriers that are on the road today. They started because somebody went out and bought one truck and decided, I'm going to haul freight with that truck. And then they grew it to two trucks, to four trucks, and what have you. And now, in some cases, there are 25,000 pieces of equipment under that one company name. And that's how it all starts. It's that threat to the American dream, if you will. And it jeopardizes a business model that many people are get involved in, not because they were made to get involved in, because they wanted to get involved in it that way. That's how they wanted to be part of the trucking industry. They wanted to start their own business and haul their own freight. And these bills, like the word, the language that comes out of DOL or AB5 certainly jeopardize that. Why would we want to jeopardize a business model that has been so successful and representative of what this country actually stands for? It doesn't make much sense to me and why we would do that.
Yeah. And if they, you know, I always think a strong argument is that if they really wanted to be employees, there's certainly plenty of opportunities. When was the last time you passed a truck on the road or a truck passed you that didn't have a sign on the back that said, we're hiring, you know, with a number?
We're hiring, and they list all the benefits that go along with the job. So, and that's the reality is this industry takes everyone that is interested in being a professional truck driver, without a doubt. They prove they have their worth with a CDL and what have you, and have a safe driving record. There's always going to be a home for that person.
So if this rule goes into effect, what do you think the TCA would do in terms of advising its members on how to deal with it?
Oh, we can. There's various different types of ways in which we talk about, and there obviously with AB5, you know, you look at what's going on in California, and there's the several different types of practices, two check method, if you will, don't do business in California, all sorts of different options that will go into effect when you're doing it. But make sure you have all your ducks in a row, if you will, because certainly I think everybody will wait for the shoe to fall for one of these misclassification lawsuits, whether it's AB5 or this DOL language, for somebody to suffer the consequences in. So make sure you're operating to the letter of the law, whether it's that economic reality test that they talk about. And certainly make sure that the independent contractor that you have signed on is exactly that, isn't an independent contractor. And there's no gray area or ambiguity in that. So you're following all the rules and regulations that are bestowed upon that and allow for them to continue to operate. That becomes the biggest issue.
Yeah, that is the great irony of all this, is that the greatest thing that could happen to the trucking industry right now is a bunch of lawsuits. It would be bad for the companies that got sued, but it would provide a body of law that would allow it to make it a lot more transparent for companies to follow on what they need to do to meet this. I mean, the regulations that have been passed are not particularly granular.
Correct. And that becomes the biggest issue. At some point, somehow, some way, one of these things is going to happen, which will clarify it up a little bit so that, like you said, the ambiguity will be removed and there will be either a blueprint for success or a blueprint for failure, depending on how you look at it.
All right, we're almost 6 months from the Supreme Court kicking back AB5 back to California. It legally became the law of the land a couple of months later, but effectively became the law of the land on June 30th. What changes have you seen in California? I know that's like our data doesn't show a lot. I mean, in terms of like volume, there are changes at the port. There's less coming through LA Long Beach. We know that AB5 was targeted, you know, on trucking in general, but really drayage specifically. You could argue that boats are staying away, that ships are staying away from Los Angeles, Long Beach for a whole variety of reasons. It doesn't necessarily have to be AB5. But from your vantage point, what's been the biggest impact? Maybe everybody's just trying to figure out what's going on.
I think it's a little of that. It's everybody's trying to figure out what's going on and the effects of the changes they have made to their business model, whether or not I know some carriers that just don't even want to go into California anymore. So Now, again, ignoring California, which is what, if it were a country, would be the fifth largest.
Now it's just past Germany.
Can you really avoid that if you want to be a profitable trucking company? But the reality is going to be is making sure they do business with independent contractors that may not be housed in California. So there's a whole gamut of things that are going on in terms of the way AB5 has affected that business model and how those people that are independent contractors are doing that. Even independent contractors have moved their basis of operations out of the state in some cases and are doing it in other areas. So it has tremendous effects, those of which we have yet to see the economic ramifications of. But I imagine at some point as it starts to spread, which it will, chances are obviously Washington and Oregon will probably fall into that same manner in which California did. Generally follows that direction, and the ramifications will start spreading eastward. So at this point in time, I think we will start to see the economic ramifications at some point.
Yeah, of all the litigation the industry probably needs, it probably needs to be to have the state of California file suit against a company that moved across the border to Arizona and Nevada and does business in California. And what is the legal ability to enforce that law against somebody who did that? And that's part of the whole OIDA action, where they joined in with the California Trucking Association as an intervener in the AB5 case, which continues to go through the courts, and that the whole Commerce Clause question. So, Dave, you and I are going to be talking about this for a long time.
I wish we weren't, but I think we definitely will be.
I'm having a lot of fun covering it. So I can't say I don't want it to go away. It's too much fun as a journalist. So anyway, Dave, we want to thank David Heller with the American Trucking Associations. He has been a longtime friend of Freightways, longtime friend of mine. I'd have to say that Dave was the first person in the industry that I can say, oh, yeah, I know somebody in trucking. It's Dave Heller when I joined Freightways. So I'm always very appreciative of that. So, Dave, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year.
Right back at you. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and I wish you the best of 2023.
You too. So, and we want to thank all of our listeners and viewers. It's been an interesting year here on Drilling Deep. We were all audio through August, and then we went to video after September 1st and kind of joined that whole lineup of FreightWaves video podcasts that you can find on FreightWaves TV. You can still find us on all the major podcast platforms. You'll just hear us and not see us. We're going to be back in 2023. We've already got some pretty good guests lined up to kick off the year. I've been your host for all this year, and it's been an honor. I want to say thank you to our engineer, South Turk, for putting up with me all this year. And please join us again.